The San Jose Sharks Audio Network is on 24 hours a day. Whether you're in the office or on the go, make sure that you download the Sharks SAP Center app and hit listen anytime. You can also find us on your computer by going to sjsharks.com/listen. If it's a game broadcast, breaking news, or a player feature, the place to find it is right here on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.
Coming to you from the heart of Silicon Valley,
this is CUDA Confidential,
the official podcast of the San Jose Barracuda, AHL affiliate of the San Jose Sharks. Now, here's your host, Nick Nolenberger.
All right, welcome back to CUDA Confidential. We are very pleased to be joined by Barracuda forward Brendan Hoffman. First and foremost, thank you for the time and congratulations. You are officially under contract for the 2026-27 season. It's your first AHL contract. What does that mean to you?
It's a lot. It's exciting. It's really cool to be given the opportunity. But I think now more than ever is the time to start working and get ready for the season.
So you're currently in Toronto and you played your junior hockey in the OHL. You played junior hockey, youth hockey before joining the OHL in Toronto. So that's become a little bit of home away from home. What is your summer like? I know you're from North Carolina, you're from Charlotte, and you spend some time there, but you're right now in Toronto. So lay it out for us. What does your summer look like? How are you training? Where are you training? What's going on?
I've been with Dan Noble for a long time now up in Toronto. I was here back when I played U16 and when I played in the OHL for Erie. So I kind of just always have relied on him. He's a really good source of training and guidance for me, I think, as well. Plus, I think the program he runs and the guys that are in it just kind of add to the overall effect that it has and the positive benefits I think it gives me. But outside of that, obviously, there's a lot of miles on the road. Usually spend most of the week up here or in Buffalo or wherever there's skates or workouts to be done. It's usually within like a Toronto to where I'm at is probably like 2.5 hours. So it's really not too much driving when you think about it. You get a good podcast going, but most weeks I'm up here in Toronto. There's plenty of ice. There's plenty of workouts to be done. And then on the weekends or on the occasional time, I'll take a week off. I'll probably go down to Charlotte and go down, see the family, see the girlfriend, and really take a load off. But the summer is, that's a good time to get rest, I think. But it's also important to kind of kick it into high gear and really dial in on the small details.
Because you've traveled so much throughout your career, we talked about, and we'll dive into it a little bit. You grew up in Charlotte, but as you got better and better, you're expanding the level of play. You ultimately go to Atlanta. From there, you go up to Toronto and then into the OHL, and the rest is history. Do you feel a little bit nomadic? But when you go back to Charlotte, is it provide a grounding for you, kind of a recharge, because it is home ultimately?
Yeah, that's actually a really good question, because I was thinking about that, where my parents have this thing where we kind of started it like back when I was 15, because I was obviously playing like two or three sports in high school. I was trying to do everything, and after school activities were a huge thing with me. But my parents kind of had this thing where it's like for 2 weeks after hockey season is done, ever since I finished the OHL or started playing in the OHL, and I focused on one sport, they took about 2 weeks to a month and a month and a week or something like that, where I just don't do anything. And they're like, just don't do anything. Because the last thing you want is to go into something like training in the summer and you're so burnt out from the season that the second you see a hockey puck and a set of weights, you're like, I don't want to do this again. So they kind of, it's like an itch almost. But I think one of those grounding mechanisms that they've kind of taught me over the years was being able to go back to Charlotte and just literally throw my hockey bag in the garage and just be like, don't even worry about it. Like, don't even think about it. Like, go have fun. Like, you're not going to be able, you're going to get more out of properly relaxing than you will stressing about not lifting today, or maybe you're taking a week off, maybe you'll be behind. So I think, yeah, Charlotte, as well as in general getting away from it, has been a really good grounding mechanism this summer and in summers past.
What's something that you really miss about home during the season?
Charlotte specifically?
Yeah, Charlotte, living kind of in that region, maybe food, maybe just lifestyle.
Well, I'd say just the downtowns. Yeah. I love walking in some of the nicer parts near Charlotte. Like, I don't know if you've ever been, but just the whole city itself has obviously grown a lot ever since I was a kid there. I mean, it's expanded so much, but I think my favorite part is honestly just going back to the rink I started playing hockey at when I was five, which is the extreme ice center down there. I think it's the Checkers practice facility now, but it's good just going back there and just being able to look back on everything that I've done so far in my life. I mean, however you want to look at it, I was at point A, now I'm at point B, and who knows where I'll be a year from now, but it's cool to kind of just go back and you see kids who might be in a similar situation as you, where you see how programs have changed and grown. But specifically, I do miss Carolina's barbecue. I miss that a lot. I don't know what it is, but there's something at that. And just like, honestly, I do miss NASCAR season. It's weird to say, but like, there's a certain aesthetic about it where like you're in the summer and you see NASCAR on television, barbecue, cookouts, tailgates. Like that is something where I miss it. I do miss that a lot.
Yeah, I actually spent a summer in that area. I wasn't in Charlotte specifically, but I was about 35 minutes out, but it is a beautiful downtown. It's a big banking community. I believe that's where Bank of America is based out of. And then you mentioned NASCAR. I think the NASCAR Hall of Fame is based out of downtown Charlotte as well. But a beautiful town, really clean. But yeah, really, really cool city. Are you a sweet tea fan?
It's a hot take, but my mom actually kind of influenced me from a young age. She liked unsweetened iced tea, which was very taboo in the South, especially when you get south of like Virginia. You have to specifically ask for it, because when you're north, you can just ask for iced tea and they'll give it to you unsweetened. But if you go south, you get to a certain point where they stop. Even if you get iced tea, you're just going to get sweet iced tea.
Yeah.
So I've never had a particular inkling towards it. I've only had it a couple times, but the one thing I do definitely like about the Cheerwine is actually one of my favorite things down there.
What is that?
It's like a sweet cherry soda. Almost.
Okay.
Not even like a soda. It's like a very lightly carbonated, like, I can only have it a couple of times because it is really sugary, but it's just a Southern one I like.
Yeah, it's a comfort food. Yeah, it's funny with the sweet tea because I got into it a little bit. It's really good. But you realize just how much sugar is in it, it's hard to get past that because, I mean, there's a lot of sugar in it, but it is very, very good. There's a reason why it's as popular as it is down there.
Oh, yeah. And you find if you watch how they make it, you realize how much sugar.
The white sugar just gets poured in there.
A whole carton just right in the top. You're like, oh, that's the whole thing.
That's amazing. So let's go back to last year. So you came in and you were having the best season of your career in Idaho. You had 32 goals, I think, in 44 games. You were leading the league and you didn't play in the ECHL for the final 2 months of the regular season, yet you finished top five in goals. What clicked? Because you scored 25 goals the year before and then 32 in 44 games, leading the league at the time that the Barracuda signed you to a PTO. So what switched in your fourth season of pro?
I think a lot of it was the mental side of the game. Obviously, physically, I've been doing better each year. But the big thing was kind of just realizing how to use my shot to generate momentum, if that makes sense. One of the ways in which I started thinking about it, and this was partially due to my coaches in Idaho and my coaches in the summer, where it was like, I kind of had been playing a little smaller than my actual size and not necessarily like going around and blowing everyone up or starting fights, but I was going into the slot and going to scoring areas like tops of the circles around the net. And I was going into it intentionally avoiding trying to get blown up while I shot. And I think that started taking away from how I could shoot the puck with more accuracy or more power. So it was like, I think it was kind of a touch and feel thing, because my first couple games, I still had to get back into the pace of play and everything. But guys, when I started really like shooting the puck and then following up, I feel like guys started backing off more. So I think part of it was definitely attacking the game as opposed to sitting back and letting stuff happen. Maybe it's a bad angle shot, but if you take like a shot at a goalie's feet when he's not expecting it out of the corner, that could go in the net. And the goals all count the same on the scoreboard. Doesn't matter how you get them. So I think that was kind of just being able to use offense to generate momentum was a big thing I started changing. That and just body positioning was something they worked on a ton, obviously, up in San Jose. But I think a lot of stuff was just getting stuff to the front of the net and using my size was kind of the big focal point.
Is that something you have to learn? Because It seems like from a fan perspective, from a broadcasting perspective, we just assume big guys, you're big. You're going to use that big frame. You're going to be physical. You are a big guy. And that's an understatement. And what do you weigh now on a good day? I mean, you're listed at 240 odd pounds. What do you weigh normally? Yeah.
I think I'm in the season, I can get anywhere from like 240 to 250. Usually I'd hover right now. I think I'm 242, 243. So definitely on the larger side in terms of size, but
you carry it well. You're just a big guy. I mean, you're naturally a big human being. To learn how to utilize that size. And you mentioned it doesn't mean going out there and being just a physical menace force in that way, but using your frame in an offensive situation to advantageously put you in better spots. That's got to be something that is learned, right? It's not always just a guarantee people are going to utilize their size if they have it.
Yeah, like, I mean, the biggest argument towards learning your size, it doesn't really put you into, just because you're big or you're small, doesn't like automatically put you into a niche of what you can and can't do. It might give coaches and everyone like a first impression, but I mean, like Vinny, like Anthony Vincent, like what is he, 5'11", 5'10"?
Yeah, around there.
He's probably one of the hardest hitters in the league. Like, he's a maniac. When he's forechecking you, he's going to put you through the wall. The guy's not necessarily the biggest human being, but he plays like it. And that's kind of the learning curve where he's learned how to use his body to hit people and make an impact on the game, despite maybe not being as tall or as heavy as other guys who do the same role as he does, but he does it better. So getting back to how you kind of thought it was going to be a learning point, it is learning, because I think so many bigger guys are brought up with the, I don't want to say misconception, but the assumption that they know how to play big when they are big. And just because you're a taller guy doesn't always mean you're going to win a puck battle, because guys can get lower than you. Guys can leverage momentum. But I do think bigger guys have to learn how to use reach and know that if a guy's going to bump you in the corner, how to use that. Because when you're shorter, you typically are lower to the ice. You have a little bit better knee bend most of the time. It's definitely was a learning curve for me. I mean, I shot up from like 6 foot to 6'3" or 6'4" when I was in my second year junior or first year junior. And it was like, no one teaches you how to change how you skate, how to change how you bend your knees. Like, it's a very difficult thing to learn, because some guys can just do it better. Some guys have to be more upright. I think it is a big learning curve. And I think most of that comes from in-game, just getting bumped, see how you feel. Maybe if you change your body one way or the other, you'll feel better getting hit or feel better hitting. So I think a lot of it was experience and getting just settled into the right mindset. But yeah, I think it was important. It was a big part, I think, coming into this year, the full size aspect and learning how to use it.
When you've seen your growth and evolution from the OHL to not even knowing if you were going to be a pro hockey player to now entering your fifth season, you're going up a level, you've got a chance to be on an AHL roster this year. Do you feel like you're just kind of scratching the surface on what you could be, and that there's still such a high ceiling given your physical package and given the trajectory that you have continued to go along during your career?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you always want to be looking forward and looking beyond, but I think specifically you kind of can't let yourself get lost. So, I mean, I can sit here. I mean, I'm probably on the bigger side of players that have played in the last couple of years. I've got decent size. I know I can work hard and all that, but I think I owe it to myself and teammates, coaches, whoever. I just got to go into the season like I've gone into the last one, just focusing on winning and stuff like that. I think I will do more for myself working towards a team result than I would chasing anything individual or kind of focusing solely on myself. I think collectively rising waters raises all ships. So I think that's kind of a good mindset to have.
Well, speaking of that, you're actually going to be in development camp from what I've been told. That'll be a chance to be with the coaches, get back to San Jose, continue to kind of hone your skills going into the season. How do you utilize a 3 or 4 day very crunched learning period like a development camp?
It's good. I think it's really good too, because you kind of get, obviously it's a dev camp, so you get some guys from the draft, you get some guys for invites, And those guys are obviously very hungry and they've been working really hard. They're going to be chomping at the bit for an experience like this to make any impression they can. And I do think it's important to kind of get that pace at a youthful pace, I guess, where you have guys who are just going 100 miles an hour. It'll be good to kind of get that going in the middle of the summer, set the tone, be able to get back in front of the coaches, feel the puck again, obviously reconnect with all the guys out there would be really nice, but it's going to be good to see the kind of talent that's brought in and how you match up against it. It's always good to kind of test that.
We're talking to Barracuda 4, Brendan Hoffman, just signed a one-year contract for the upcoming season, his first AHL contract of his career. He has really worked for everything. It's been an inspiring story to watch you and get to know you too. And I love your approach because you're somebody who's just kind of enjoying the ride, very grateful for all the opportunities, even though you've worked hard to get them. And you just have a good approach. I think a good perspective that I think can also rub off on some of your teammates as well. I want to go back all the way to the start. You, as we mentioned, are from a very unique background. Certainly, California is not a traditional hockey market, but neither is Charlotte, North Carolina. 2 hours away is an NHL team in Raleigh and the Carolina Hurricanes, but that was not necessarily right in your backyard. It's a couple hours away. Take us through the story. I know it was kind of a unique one to kind of cross paths with the sport. You were at a field trip, if I'm not mistaken. You saw a woman training as maybe part of the national team you had mentioned. Tell us the story how this all started, this hockey journey.
I originally did start with that field trip. I saw a girl hockey player. I'm forgetting her name, but she was trying out for, I believe, the U18 Women's World Junior Championship or U17, one of those two. She was getting a private lesson from a coach in that area. And I kind of told my mom, because they originally put me in figure skates. And the figure skates were just not doing it. So, and then the coach was like, you got to put him in hockey skates. And I got put in hockey skates and I was skating better. So I wanted to do lessons with that guy and I ended up doing it and he helped me a lot and kind of just spiraled into what I was at today and all that. But I think a lot of the motivation also came from the Hurricanes winning the cup because I remember it that year. And that was Brenda Moore, Cole, Stahl, Williams, Caverley Ward, Cam Ward too, and Aaron Ward. But I remember that them winning the cup that year had like a residual effect on the surrounding areas too. A lot of like hockey wasn't big then, obviously, but I think that was a big kickstart to that area. Cause I think only like 4 or 5, maybe 8 years later than that, which is a long time, but they started doing AAA programs in Charlotte. And when I was there, it was only AA, but yeah, that was kind of just a good motivation seeing an NHL team from Carolina win it, especially against Edmonton, who at the time was a very good team from Canada. It was motivating. I think it was good to have, like, I had a Stahl jersey, like my brother had a Brenda Moore jersey. Like I wore that thing to skates all the time. So, I mean, it was good. It was good to see hockey could reach a community like that. And I just think I fell in love with it.
Was Stahl your favorite player growing up?
Yeah, I liked Eric Stahl. My brother liked Rod Brindamore. Obviously, we love both those guys and everyone on the team, but those are our two.
What are you making of this current iteration of the Carolina Hurricanes, who are right on the cusp as we record this of getting back to the Stanley Cup final?
Obviously, they run a really, really tight ship, and they got a really aggressive forecheck. But you never want to count out a team like Montreal, even up 3-1. But I hope they obviously go to the Cup final, but they've got probably the biggest test of all in Vegas, I think, at the end. I think Vegas is on an absolute heater right now.
Yeah, the way they smothered Colorado was pretty insane in that game. Colorado couldn't even get it past the red line. It was like nothing I had seen.
My bracket looks horrible.
Yeah, no, I think everybody's just busted at this point.
I had Edmonton Avalanche in the conference finals, but I had Montreal beating Tampa, which no one else agreed with me on, but I had that. But
okay.
I didn't have them make in the conference final.
I mean, to have Edmonton, Colorado, I most would have probably picked that. It's been a great playoff so far, and just the unpredictability, I guess, if you will, of it all. That's kind of the fun. So you start off, you go from figure skates to ice skates, and the bug has been planted, the seed has been planted, rather, and now you've got this passion. Talk us through the initial stages when it became apparent amongst your family and with your parents that this was something you really loved, that you wanted to do. How do you get from that point to then traveling to Atlanta, playing for a travel team, which is just under 4 hours away from where you're at in Charlotte.
Yeah, it was weird because I think I played up a lot because everyone was like, they're playing multiple sports and I was too, but I think everyone kind of had a focus on like soccer or football or lacrosse. And I played lacrosse and hockey, but I focused more on hockey, I think. And I always found I was just playing a little bit better, a little bit more often, I think, than other kids my age, which kind of helped me get more used to it. Yeah, I think it was when I was 11. It might have been when I was 11. And it was when you got into I think it was called minor peewee. That was the age range. I think they changed it now. It's all 12U now. But I think it was that age. And USA Hockey had put in a rule where you couldn't play up out of your age group or something like that. And I remember that was when like Hughes and a bunch of the other kids went up to Canada because Canada didn't have that. I think Canada didn't have that rule. They had an exception, but long story short, I obviously wasn't in the category of those guys, but I remember that I couldn't play up. So I would have been playing my age double A where I was playing up, I think a year or two double A in Charlotte and there was really no one there. And I remember I was doing pretty good. So my parents were obviously like, okay, like he might be playing with some not as good players. Like, is this going to set him back? And there was a parent that had told us that they knew the head coach of the Atlanta Fire, or the assistant coach, I want to say. And they basically were just like, just come down. Like, you're one of the better players there. Like, we'd love to have you. We do travel tournaments. So like, obviously there's not a lot of teams down there. So most of the travel would be out of town anyways. So we would just meet them there instead of having to be in Atlanta and play all of our games. But yeah, we went down to the Atlanta Fire. They had a couple guys there that were pretty good. They ended up playing D1 and I played with them. But yeah, and then we ended up, I think my third year, we got an invite to Pee Wee Quebec. And that was like the big thing back in the day. Obviously, Quebec and Montreal as a whole are just the hockey mecca. They're crazy about it up there. It's huge. And what better place to play in front of a lot of fans when you're young? So we went up there and we played. I remember getting all the little pins and stuff. You traded pins all the time. It was sick. And then after that year, I played in a spring tournament. So I would have been 12 or 13. Played in a spring tournament. And a coach from the Toronto Junior Canadiens saw me and said that I could play in the GTHL. So it was like completely just, this is in like Niagara, I think, or something. So I was like, what are you doing here? And then my parents were like, listen, like if you went from Charlotte to Atlanta and then you went from Atlanta to Toronto, like that is obviously like a severe upgrade in talent who you're going to be playing. She's like, they basically sat me down and said, like, it doesn't matter if you go up there and you're like one of the not as good players on your team. It's like, you're going to learn more from going up there and taking this seriously and working hard. And if you go and make the AHL, NHL or whatever, get drafted first overall in every league, perfect. It's great. If you go up there, you learn how to work hard, you play a sport at a high level, you are doing more for yourself maturity wise and understanding how to take care of yourself than a lot of kids your age do. So if you just take it seriously and you do well in school, then we will help you. And they've obviously done everything for me. And I'm very grateful for my parents. But I think the most important thing was them having that talk with me. Because I was like 12 years old. Like, I'm not exactly weighing my life choices, talking about taxes, 401k, life savings, and your retirement plan. But it was a good talk to have because it let me know how serious they were. And obviously, went up there and played. Went to high school up there. I lived up there for 4 or 5 years. 5 years almost. Yeah, met a lot of great people. And Dan being one of them, Dan Noble. And I have a good amount of friends up here from high school and just from hockey itself. And yeah, kind of like a second home or a third home or how many homes I have, I don't know.
Well, I love your parents' approach because that's a tough thing to send your baby boy away. Now, I'm assuming they came up with you.
Yeah, they got a small place there that my mom would be up there with me for pretty much the year. And my dad would come up and visit and then go back down and come up and visit and go back down. So it was good. It was tough. They made a huge sacrifice. Obviously, they were married for, I think, over 20 years at that point, and over 25 years at that point. something like that. And they obviously, I mean, massive sacrifice, not seeing your wife and your husband for 2-3 weeks at a time every month, seeing them for a week every month, maybe, like, that's difficult, right?
Right.
The amount of expenses obviously was insane, but I do think that at the end of it all, like, I was lucky to go on some scholarships and get some help with education and stuff. I had pretty good grades, but I think the biggest thing was obviously understanding their sacrifice. It didn't really take the joy out of being like a high schooler or something, because obviously you don't want to put every difficult decision on your kid. But I think it did help me realize that I could have fun, but I also had to understand that I had to work hard at the very least. So,
and what are your parents' names?
Ralph is my dad and Diane is my mom.
And what do your parents do for a living?
My dad is a prosthodontist. So he does anything fake mouth wise. So like fake teeth. Perfect.
Perfect for a hockey player.
Perfect. Yeah. Haven't had to use that yet. Knock on
no, board. I can tell. They look all natural.
So far. We'll get a couple edits on them soon, hopefully. But yeah, then my mom was in business administration, but she actually kind of got out of that so she could raise myself and my siblings. So, because I got an older sister and two older brothers as well. So.
And you were the only hockey player amongst the group.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just love your parents' approach, because you may think they want him to play up in Toronto. He's going to be in the NHL. Our son is going to make it all the way. But instead, they took an approach of what a life opportunity, what a chance for you to grow as a young man, as a young human being. And if you have a successful career off of that, great. But the lessons that'll be learned, the experiences, that weighs a lot more than potential opportunities as a hockey player. I just love that approach from your parents. And it sounds like they supported you all the way and made some incredible sacrifices to see you succeed in this sport.
Yeah. And I think it was good too, because I witnessed it more in Toronto than anything, the really upset parent at a hockey game thing. And my parents never really got like that if it was like a matter of me not scoring or like not winning a game. They only got upset with me when I didn't try or acted like I didn't care, which was obviously it's the right way to do it. But I always think back about that talk where it was there can be parents when they talk to their kids, they're like, you got to go up. You got to be on the best team. You got to do this, leading points, a lot of stuff, or spend all this money. You're going up there. And my parents are like, dude, if you work hard, odds are you're probably going to do well for yourself. And then if you don't, you flunk out, you never want to play hockey again. You got to go to Toronto, go to a good school on scholarship, and you get to have a lot of learning experiences and you're an athlete. What else can you want? And so that was a big thing. It made it feel less like a challenge or like a life commitment. And it made it feel more like almost like a fun 2-3 year stretch, like almost like a boarding school fun stretch thing. So that was kind of the way they framed it.
That's awesome. And it is continuing to unfold. Your story is continuing to be written, but the fact you're still playing, I think that makes it all worth it. We're talking to Brendan Hoffman, Barracuda forward. A couple more for you. You get drafted into the OHL. You play for the Erie Otters. The 1 year, though, you didn't have a season. The OHL canceled a season due to COVID. What did you do during that year when you didn't play at all?
I trained a lot. I ended up actually meeting my current girlfriend of 5 years. But I did a tournament during that time. So it was called a tournament that we guys didn't have their last season in the OHL. So there was this huge void, I guess, in terms of being able to watch players and scout them. So like I want to say it was the 2020 draft. So it was the O2s and the O3s. Like the O2s had a little bit of it because they had the season from October to February and then everything got shut down. And then the draft was in like September, I think. They delayed it really long because they delayed the playoffs. And then the following year was the year that they had like nothing. Like they had nothing. So it was crazy. So I remember it was the day that it got canceled. Andrew Parrott, who plays on, I want to say Rockford, he reached out and was like, hey, I got this idea. Like, let's just do a tournament, but it has to be in an American city because Canada was fully locked down. So we ended up doing a tournament in Erie and it was called the PBHH. It was just the abbreviation of our last names. And we ended up getting like 120, 110 players to come out. We got hotels booked for them. It was all just donations too, which was really cool. But yeah, it was a good tournament. We had like, I think 100 and something plus scouts. We had a bunch of GMs come out. Hockey ops guys were there. It was really cool. We had like meals for the guys. It was all at these rinks. It was at the practice rinks for the Otters. So yeah, during COVID, it was kind of like a side school project almost, in finance, just kind of planning the whole thing. But yeah, that took up the bulk of it. But yeah, outside of that, just kind of enjoyed the time. Probably played a bit too much Fortnite, but
that's all right. That's all right. It was a time in everyone's lives where we got to do some things that maybe we wouldn't get to do in our normal day to day. So there were, I guess, some cons or some pros to that situation, despite a lot of cons. Quickly, a couple more for you. And thank you again for the time. You told me at one point when you finished your junior career, you basically had one offer, and that was from the Reading Royals, a tryout in the ECHL. And if you didn't make that team, you had the full intention of probably just hanging up the skates and moving on. Take us back to that period of time, what your mindset was, and now you're playing, this is going to be your fifth season. So walk us through that entire process to kind of latch on to the pro game and get on with the team in Reading.
Yeah, it was primarily my dad that kept me playing, actually. Because I remember I was done in Erie, and I had kind of, I felt as though I'd kind of stayed a bit too long in Erie almost. Obviously, they were a young team, and they were rebuilding a lot right when I had gotten there. Obviously, a phenomenal organization. They really treated me the right way. I think I just, at certain points, I feel like I doubted decisions I'd made. And I think that kind of made me think that when my junior career was over, I was like, I just don't want to play in the coast. I'm like, I just don't know if I like hockey enough. And I've just kind of never really thought about playing minor league hockey, especially in as hard of a league as the coast is and how tough it is. So I remember that whole summer I was training, and the whole time I had never been more anxious in my life, because I was like, anything can happen. Anyone can call me, and no one's called me. And it was like, what was it? It was like the whole summer, like everyone was going to like development camp. There were guys coming in and out of the gym. They're like, oh yeah, we got to go here. Gonna go practice with this team, yada yada. And then I was just always in the gym because I had nowhere else to be. And I think I got an AHL camp invite from the Charlotte Checkers because I was from Charlotte. I was the only hockey player that was currently playing from Charlotte. So I went there and I had a good experience. And obviously it was a hard camp. I didn't end up making it, got cut. And then I was back, and then Reading was like, hey, you were at camp, throw you a tryout, like, come on down. And I don't even think I was supposed to make the team, but I think I had a decent preseason, a decent camp. And I want to say one of the guys was hurt for the first couple of weeks of the year, and I kind of went into his spot, and I ended up just kind of staying there. And just throughout the year, I just stayed in the depths. This was back when they only allowed 11 forwards. So I was like one of the two extra forwards. So I was just on the wing playing with whatever center was there. But yeah. And then the equipment guy in Reading, I remember he said something in like December, and he's like, it's just a game. Like, that's all it is. Like, you come into the rink every day, you think it's the biggest thing in the world, Stanley Cup finals. It's just a game. It just matters. It's like the money is what makes it all different. But at the end of the day, it's just a game. So I think that kind of helped it. But my dad, I remember when I was going through that time, was just like, hey, give yourself a year or two, maybe three, just to see how it is. And then it turned into four, and here we are. But yeah, I think I owe it to him more than anyone.
I love it. Again, an incredible story of perseverance. You think about pro hockey players in the modern age, most of them are being compensated well enough that they do not have a second job. You do have a summer job, though, because if you're not in the NHL, you're not making NHL money. You still got to try to make ends meet. And why not get an extra job in the summer? So what are you doing right now? You're in Toronto. Where are you making some side cash?
Actually, funny enough, this summer I am not. So this, yeah, I haven't.
Well, congrats. You got an NHL contract, and now you're a hockey player through and through. 100%. No second job.
I can relax for now. So yeah, I think most of it, though, the last couple summers has just been being really frugal and saving money and stuff like that kind of helps you. So yeah, my parents have helped a lot, obviously, and I've kind of saved money in a way that's kind of helped me not have to worry about it too much in the summer. But Yeah, I mean, it's always good. Plus, you tack that on. I've been trying to do school in the summer. This year, I'm not actually, so which is nice. So I've taken a bit of a full break to focus on everything, but it's been good. I think it's good to get away from it in the summer a lot.
That was going to be my follow-up question to close this interview out. Going to Penn State Online, majoring in cybersecurity. You've got an emphasis in a couple of different departments as well. Beyond that, you said you're not taking classes in the summer. Good for you. Get the summer off to recharge. But how's school going? And I mean, again, very impressive that you're trying to accomplish that while playing pro hockey. But how's school going? And then I want to ask, dovetail off of that, what would be your future endeavor post-hockey career?
So, yeah, school's been going good. I just finished my spring semester. I'm going to apply for classes, actually, in the next week. But it's been going good. I've got a couple of roles on it already. It's like some excellence thing. But I've been doing good. Been getting A's and B's pretty much and everything. But, yeah, I mean, it's obviously it's good to find a balance where you can orient your days. Because there is a lot of downtime, I think, during the season. There are some points where you'll be day to day, you're just doing everything. You get home, you're dead tired. But there are days off where you're just sitting at home with nothing to do. And I think it's good to get out of bed and stimulate the brain a bit and do a little bit of work. But what was the dovetail off that?
Just what do you see yourself maybe
future job? Yeah, that's right.
Using with that degree?
Obviously, I kind of have a knack with computers. So on anything in that field would be really fun, especially like white hat hacking is interesting, where it's like, you would work for like a corporation and you would attempt to hack one of their mainframes or one of their websites or their services. And you would essentially just find ways in which they need to improve security. So that's obviously like a really cool way of applying my degree. There's kind of like more relaxed ways of doing it where you're just like a security consultant or like an IT consultant. But I think going to the finance side of that, one of the things I really like was kind of going back. And because of hockey, I would like to almost become an agent in a way. Or some sort of player representative. I wouldn't even mind being a coach, but I just think I'd have to have some time away from the game for a bit to get back into it like that. Yeah, I think doing something hockey would be like a really cool thing. I've thought about like business ideas before with it, but kind of just creating like a portal to do like all of the NHL's like contract negotiation and like different things with. So all the database information is stored in one spot and like, teams can use it in different ways. They get around like tax differentials and stuff like that through different states and different organizations. But yeah, just there's a bunch of business ideas. But I also my sister also had a good one that pitched to me, and it was making a women's clothing brand with big enough pockets. That was the other one.
Okay. So, okay.
Yeah, but well,
you don't want to give away your idea.
Maybe they'll be out there. Someone's had these ideas.
So is school actually paid by the OHL? Is that part of your deal?
Yep.
And so how quickly do you have to utilize that?
It was until the, I want to say, second or third year after your last game in the OHL. But because of the COVID year, they extended it another year.
Okay.
Or another 2 years, I'm not sure. But I've been using it since. And as long as you are continuously using it between the winter and spring semesters, you're not required to take it in the summer, the way I understand it. But if you are just taking it, then you pretty much are going to get the benefits of it. So they're really supportive, and they've got a really good thing going on over there with promoting education post-hockey. So,
well, if you were a little younger by about 2 years, you in theory could have went and played NCAA hockey. Do you ever think about that could have been a thing for you?
Yeah, it's so weird because I think back in the day, a lot of guys had that was like a huge decision when you were what, like 16, 15. Everyone's like, oh, I'm verbally committed here, I'm verbally committed there, or I'm going to go to junior here, junior there. And it's like, it was such a huge decision back in the day. And nowadays, guys don't even have to think about it, which I think is more beneficial. It takes the stress off of it. You get the best of both worlds at the end of it. College is more of a man's game. You get it towards the end of your junior career, and you can start out playing junior and get exposed to a pro schedule at a young age. So I think it's better nowadays than opposed to having to make a decision when you're 15 about whether to go to college or playing junior. That's a crazy hard decision to make. But
yeah, I know it's been a transition. Some of these leagues are a little bit vulnerable, I think, with the change, but ultimately it's best for NCAA hockey. I think we'll see more schools get incorporated in the coming years. And I think it's better, too, because guys can go play in what's considered the best junior league in the world, in the CHL. Brendan Hoffman, congrats on the contract. It was awesome getting to meet you last year. Just such a nice guy. Obviously, very intelligent guy, well thought out. We appreciate the time. Have a great summer. Enjoy not working. Enjoy not taking classes. And enjoy some of that nice weather this time of year in Toronto as it starts to heat up a little bit on you. But thank you again. Congratulations. We look forward to seeing you during development camp.
Sounds good, Nolly. I'll see you there.